He's a South African, a former ANC MP, and one of the first people to call for a thorough investigation into the South African arms deal. Andrew Finstein resigned in 2001 when the ANC refused to launch an investigation into the matter. Now living in the UK, he has written a globally acclaimed book, The Shadow World Inside the Global Arms Trade, a book that lifted the lid of the secretive world of the global arms deal, revealed the corruption and the cover-ups behind the weapons deal, ranging from the largest in the history between the British and Saudi government to BAE's controversial transaction in South Africa, Tanzania and Eastern Europe. And now a film based on Andrew Finstein's book. We welcome Andrew to the airwaves of Radio Islam. Good morning and welcome, Andrew.
Hi, great to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking out the time to chat to us. Andrew, you've been on a rollercoaster ride of interviews after the release of the film. When you wrote the book, did you expect it to become such a global success?
No, not at all. You know, it even started with my first book after... I remember when I published that in late 2007, my publisher here in South Africa said, well, you know, we'll print about 2,500, and if it does very well, at some point we'll print another 1,500. And within the first year or so, it had sold 40,000.
Wow.
And a similar thing, but on a global scale, happened with this book. I think we thought it was going to be only of interest to a very narrow segment of people, but fortunately, people have found it very accessible, and I think they like the fact that we use, and when I say we, I'm talking about myself and my research team, we use the global arms trade as a mechanism to talk about the nature of politics and the nature of governance in the world today.
All intertwined. In the book, you expose both the formal government-to-government trade in arms and the shadow world of illicit weapons dealing. How closely linked are the two sides?
The two are incredibly closely intertwined. You know, this sort of distinction between the legal and illegal is an artificial one. The big defense companies and our governments, who are, after all, the biggest arms traders and dealers of all, would like us to think that there is a very clear distinction. But the reality is that the arms dealers or intermediaries who work in the illegal industry are exactly the same people who are used by the companies and our governments to pay bribes, etc., on the big formal so-called legal transactions. So the South African arms deal would have fallen into what they regard as the formal industry or the legal industry, whereas it was riddled through with corruption and other dimensions of criminality. So I think the two are really almost one and the same. The vast majority of arms deals fall into what I would describe as the grey market or the shadow world of the title.
Interesting perspective in that regard. What is the global arms trade made of? How would you describe the industry?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to note is that it is a unique and exceptional industry in that, first of all, the relationships between the companies and governments are unbelievably close, closer than any other industry, because they are seen as such an important part of national defense and of national security. And this means that there is a constant movement of people between these companies and between various branches of government, be it politics, be it defense departments, be it foreign affairs departments, be it intelligence agencies, or obviously the military. So that's the first thing that distinguishes it. The second thing that's very important is that everything that happens in this business takes place behind a national security imposed veil of secrecy. And that means that people are prepared to do things in the name of this business that they wouldn't otherwise do if there was some degree of transparency and accountability. And finally, corruption is not just an occasional problem in this trade as a consequence of some rotten individuals. It's actually built into the structure, the very DNA of the trade. So the pricing, the economics of it, are all premised on the fact that there is going to be massive corruption on these deals.
Yes, now, on a personal level for yourself, would you describe the arms deal for you as a turning point and for the ANC as an organization's morality or from a moral standing point of view?
Absolutely. I think that the arms deal was really the point at which the ANC lost its moral compass. It was the point at which, after years under Mandela, where everything was focused on the national interest, where there was no consideration of personal political power, of party interest being more important than the national interest. And with the arms deal, it was almost as though we were saying, it's okay if it's in the party interest and if it's in the interest of powerful individuals to use state contracts for corrupt purposes. And I think that was absolutely crucial. And I think that was the point at which our notions of governance in this country declined profoundly. In addition to which, to cover up the corruption in the deal, both personal corruption and party corruption, the leaders of the ANC, led by Thabo Mbeki at the time, were prepared to undermine the very institutions of democracy that they had fought so bravely, so courageously, and sacrificed so much for in order to protect themselves and the party. So Parliament was undermined. So the National Prosecuting Authority was politicized. So anti-corruption bodies were either closed down or marginalized. And for me, the great tragedy of South Africa is that this marked the point at which we became not worse than anyone else in the world, but just as bad as everyone else in the world. And it was so sad for me that it took so little time after the advent of our democracy for us to adopt the very tawdry global political norms that exist.
Very, very deep thinking behind that and analyzing and breaking down the situation. You spoke briefly about the economic implications. What role does the international trade in weapons play in the fostering of corruption? And would you say it is a dangerous, it is as dangerous as determining economic and foreign policy and undermining democracy?
Absolutely. We see these companies have such enormous impact on foreign policy, on financial and economic policies, and obviously on defense and military policy. So let me give you just one indication of how extreme this is. In the United States, which I describe in the book and the film as a country whose politics are based on legalized bribery, because you can see the linkages between political contributions made to candidates and parties and the delivery of projects for those companies who make those contributions. And the reality is the way in which policy has been affected is, first of all, at times of great economic hardships, 2007, the United States of America continues to spend over $780 billion on defense and on weaponry. So the American taxpayer is paying $1.5 trillion for a jet called the F-35 that most analysts say is of no value to improving the defense or national security of the United States of America. But to show the extent to which policymaking is dominated by what I describe as the national security elite, be aware that the United States of America's government employs more people to run one aircraft carrier than it has diplomats in the entire world. And the United States of America has 10 aircraft carriers. So the way in which the defense industry has pushed government thinking towards instinctively making war at the expense of diplomacy even affects the way in which money is spent by the United States Treasury. And this takes place to varying degrees in every country that is involved in the global arms trade.
Now, while we talk about the global arms trade, we see a global war on terror. We have Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, and the list continues. This must be an exceptionally lucrative time for arms dealers.
Well, this is exactly the point. You know, we have in the film an arms dealer, as well as various politicians and analysts, saying that this notion of this war on terror, and terrorism is, as you would know, a very sensitive issue, because let's not forget that Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher described Nelson Mandela as a terrorist for many, many decades. Let us not forget that the founders of the State of Israel effectively engaged in terrorism according to the way that the United States of America defines it. So with those sensitivities in mind, this amorphous war on terror is this perpetual war that has no end, but ensures a constant flow of billions of dollars into this national security elite and into the defense sector. And the irony of it all is that the arms trade, rather than making us more secure, actually undermines the very global security that it is supposed to bolster. And to give you just one example of how this works, the reality is that Saudi Arabia, which has, for instance, committed more beheadings in the last year than ISIS has in its entire history, is the biggest buyer of weaponry from the United States of America and from Western Europe, the biggest arms producers in the world. And let's also not forget that on the biggest arms deal in history, the Al Yamamah deal between Britain and Saudi Arabia, over £1 billion was paid into the bank accounts of the son of the Saudi defense minister, who was the Saudi ambassador to Washington at the time. And some of that money went from his accounts into his wife's accounts and into the accounts of two of the 9/11 hijackers. And finally, let's bear in mind what we describe as blowback in this trade, which is the unintended consequences of selling weapons to certain people. So it was the United States of America who funded and armed the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. And it was that same Mujahideen with those weapons and with that money that became the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, against whom the so-called war on terror is being fought. So the reality is that there are fundamental hypocrisies built into the nature of the global arms trade and its absurd war on terror.
Really, really thought-provoking and giving us insight on aspects of the arms trade that has been remained unknown to many up until this point. Andrew, it's been fascinating chatting to you on Radio Islam. Thank you very much for your time.
Not at all. Thank you. And we have one more screening in Johannesburg of the film tonight at the Olive Tree Theatre, if anyone is interested.
Thank you for sharing the information. Have a good day, Andrew.